Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and the most wonderful time of the year. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my compatriots. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
Hi. I feel like I should have come with my degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon, but I did not.
Ooh.
I'll have to figure it out. See if I can figure it out on the fly here.
I think mine is two, but we'll get there. Yeah. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Hi. Speaking of degrees of separation, Dan, I really enjoyed you on A Complicated Profession, and then The Rebound, and then A Complicated Profession, and then The Rebound, then ACP, and then The Rebound, and ACP.
I see what's happening.
Yeah, I see what's going on. Yeah.
John, I've heard you on The Rebound, The Rebound, The Rebound, and The Talk Show, and I can't help but notice I've been a little, little bit left out in the cold here.
We're doing the show right now, you know that?
We are right here.
Yeah.
Okay, well. Thank you. I'm going to try not to hold you in contempt.
All right. I got this way to start the show.
Yeah.
So this came up because you mentioned the degree separation, and I thought about this. There's an actress named Catherine Irby, who was, and this is fun because she was also the lead at the first season of Law & Order Criminal Intent, along with Vincent D'Onofrio. And she was in a movie with Kevin Bacon. Catherine Irby grew up across the street from me. Like, she was much older than me, so I didn't know her, but like, her parents lived across the street from me. I think I met her at least a couple times when I was like a little kid. So two is my Kevin Bacon number.
Okay. Boy.
There you go.
I think I'm trying to figure out how to, I'm pretty sure this math works out. A friend of mine was enjoying the company of a stuntman in Montreal who was working on First Class and who did scenes with Kevin Bacon. So there you go. Straight into the X-Men vibe of stuff. Yeah. Man.
Very nice.
I'm still looking. I don't have a good, I feel like I should be able to do it in just, you know, is that two or is that one?
Have you met Kevin Bacon?
I have not met Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, that's one.
Knowing Kevin Bacon would be one. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I'm saying three, but it's so tenuous. And I'm sure I've got a better connection to him. I knew a guy who did physical effects, like practical effects on the X-Men movies. And he, on Hugh Jackman. And I mean, has Hugh Jackman worked with Kevin Bacon? Anyway, everybody, you can understand why we have not done this show in 4 weeks.
Well,
because
I mean,
we're running on fumes.
Kevin's listening, so I'm sure he will be happy to chime in with how he knows us.
Why doesn't Kevin ever do a number of degrees of separation from John Maltz, for example?
Yeah, that's true. I know. Yeah, equal opportunity. All right. Why are we talking about Kevin Bacon?
I heard Kevin Bacon on Smart List recently, and they did not ask him about any of the seven degrees of separation stuff, and I thought that was good and classy because it's
also
a dumb thing to
wasn't our pal Lex Friedman instrumental in the Smart List podcast?
Yes, he was
showing up
actually,
somewhere, so like
go.
We have Lex
there
you go.
Yeah,
sure, okay,
we'll blame it. Why are we talking about Kevin Bacon? It's because we are here to discuss the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, which is airing on Disney Plus and features in a prominent role Kevin Bacon in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, really?
Himself.
I was just doing... Oh, yeah, no, I get it.
Probably, that was coinkidink. Yeah. Let's talk about this. Do we want to do a quick overview of this story, or how do you want to approach this? I mean, is there a story here?
Well,
not
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's enough
saved,
story.
They saved Christmas by going to get Kevin Bacon for Peter Quill.
That's right.
And at first, it seems like it's going to work out poorly. And then it does. It works out really well.
Yeah, I mean, so prominently features Drax and Mantis as sort of the starring roles. This was filmed basically concurrently with Guardians 3.
Yeah.
And is clearly set up to be a bridge between Guardians 2 and 3. There are some, like, plot things that we learn, like, basically, like, that the Guardians have taken over Nowhere from the Collector.
Mm-hmm.
And that, most importantly, Mantis is Peter Quill's half-sister.
I thought it was interesting they said that they bought it from the Collector.
Yes.
It would indicate the Collector is still alive.
That's right. When did we...
Because the last... I mean, we never really saw him in...
In Infinity War.
We just saw a fake version of him And right. I assumed that he was dead.
Hmm.
But you don't see him die, so he could easily. Yeah.
All I remember suddenly was the version of him from What If, where he's like the super buff
yes.
version that fights.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Yeah. Anyways, that was the last time I remember seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and we also, as I said, we also learned that Mantis is Peter Quill's half-sister.
Yep.
Which is something apparently that they had talked about in, like, putting in Guardians 2, like something that they knew when they were making Guardians 2, but did not have a place, I guess, in that movie for it. So,
yeah.
But I guess it's going to be important for potentially for Guardians 3. So,
yeah, Guardians 2 did a lot. Like, they already, like, the whole dad thing. And then I don't think we needed the Mantis reveal. Like, it was kind of, it's not surprising the way they revealed it, right? Like, he's been collecting his children all the time, and the fact that she would be a child is completely seems to fit in. I was surprised that she knew. Although I guess he had his mind massaged by her or something. Like, what? Like, I'm trying to remember. It's been a while since I've seen Guardians 2, but she used to help him sleep.
I've only
right?
seen that
so
movie.
Maybe there's some like
once.
Psychic,
yeah,
like interlock or something. Like, maybe she
Bleed
knew by
like,
picking it
something.
Up from her, or he just told her because he seemed to be so dismissive of her, you know? I can't remember why he was so into Peter and not her. I don't know, but Peter seemed to have the magic.
Right, because I think, that was the
plot.
I thought the idea was that he needed just another one of his kind in order to take over the universe sort of thing.
Yeah, and he'd been killing a whole bunch of them. Like, he'd make a child.
Right.
And
yeah.
Just sort of
if it didn't
them.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess she was useful to him somehow. And he,
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, she had that ability. She had those abilities. Yeah. Right? She didn't, that she could put him to sleep, you know.
Yeah.
Let him sleep and things like that. Who knows?
But anyway,
it's enough. Yeah, there's enough there that I think it's, you know,
I think it's fine.
I don't feel
I feel less retconned by this than Leia being Luke's sister in Jedi. To be honest.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, Leia was also Peter Quill's sister. It was very confusing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
If anything, the strange part is like they kind of throw it out there in the beginning just as like almost like an offhanded reveal, which I thought was a little weird. But like this whole special is a little bit strange. It's very James Gunn, who is, of course, the director of all the Guardians movies, as well as we'll talk about a little later in the show, now head honcho over at DC Studios. I don't know. I mean, I don't think the plot bears too much going into, but like, let's
go through the characters because
feelings?
So at the beginning, Peter is looking dejected and sad, and the old 97s play a Christmas song about humans on Earth, which is charming and fun. And apparently, that's he had the band write it, and then was just like, "Okay, why don't you guys just get in the makeup chair, and we'll have you play
it." Get in the makeup and do it.
Yeah, and that was a fun little Christmassy musical number that was in line with stuff. Yeah, it fit well.
Yeah.
If anything, I'm a little confused as to why Peter is sour or sad at any point, other than they need some reason to save Christmas. I don't get the motivation.
Well, I think it's Gamora.
I think it's
Gamora from Endgame, right? Like,
and possibly his dad. Yeah, his dad having
but
died.
But also,
and,
it's just it's a classic Christmas trope.
Right.
Well, I mean, it also follows on a bit on his appearance in Thor, right? Where in Love and Thunder, at the beginning, where he is, you know, hanging out with Thor, and he just seems like. I think they're tracing an evolution of Peter Quill, and I have to say up front, like I did not watch this with my wife, but I watched Thor with my wife, and she really dislikes Peter Quill.
Yeah. I could see why.
And I think he hits a sort of a particular stereotype, right? Yes. Of like the, you know, kind of like white guy fails upwards, basically, right?
Yeah.
And is a bit smarmy about it. And like I like elements of that character. I think Chris Pratt also as an actor comes with a lot of baggage.
Right.
There's a lot of people who really don't like him. I have enjoyed some of his work in the past, but I can understand people have feelings about
He can't
that.
Have a charm and a swagger to him.
I mean,
but he whatever. He's
Yeah.
If somebody says they don't like him, I will not try to dissuade them otherwise, you know? There's some people I'll go to bat for. Like, Keanu Reeves, I know people that are like, he just seems flat all the time. I'm like, yeah, but he's really fun. Like, he does a good job. Yeah. He's engaging, you know? Yeah.
But I will say, like, I think one thing that's interesting about the trajectory they've done with Peter Quill is trying to have him kind of grow up a bit through the course of these movies. I do think, like, especially in the Love and Thunder, where he appears as sort of the more adult counterpoint to Thor.
Yes.
Like trying to give him advice. And he is a little more sober at that point after everything I think that he's been through. And I think this is a continuation of that trajectory for him, of him kind of, you know, growing up, right? Like and becoming more of an adult. So I can kind of see this as a data point on that plot as we move towards Guardians 3, which seems like it's going to try and sort of take that to a conclusion.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more appropriate I think it is that Thor 4 just kind of glossed over that a little bit. At the end of, I guess, Endgame, when they're going off on their space adventures, the setup seems to be Thor and Peter Quill are going to be bickering about who the leader is. And that kind of gets resolved off screen, because by Thor 4...
Right.
Thor's just kind of checked out. Like, he's clearly way more powerful. He's like outclasses all of them, kind of thing. But Peter Quill seems to be the guy that's like definitely in charge of the spaceship and what they're going to go do and all of that kind of jazz. And at least from this and from the trailer that we'll talk about soon, I don't think there's any place for Thor to be bumping around in the next movie, at least.
Right.
Yeah. Especially because it's going to be the last one. I would be shocked if they did any more after that. But again, we'll wait to get there. Yeah.
But I just want to say, like, over the top, I know we haven't really gotten like down to like a ritual or anything like that, but I feel I was a little bit underwhelmed by this. And I know it's a light thing, right? It's 45 minutes. It's not like supposed to be super heavy. It's very, you know, candy coated, whatever. Like, there are some bits that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
I think what was very obvious to me was it felt like I feel like Chris Pratt phoned in a bit of his work in this. He doesn't have a lot to do, right? He's only in a few different scenes.
Yeah. That's what he felt what weirdly like when he felt all dour at the beginning.
Capital A acting, like at some parts, like the part where they have him wandering around being amazed at like all the Christmas stuff that's gone up. It felt very much like he is emoting, like he's over the top, like, oh, hey, like it would like be like if I tried acting, right? Like, I don't think I'd be very good at it. It felt a little flat to me. And I don't know if that's just because they're filming in addition to everything they're doing, but I don't know.
The tone, a lot of the tone was just camp for a Christmas special. So I kind of enjoyed it. I mean, the first time I watched it, I think maybe my reaction was similar to yours, but I watched it again with Hank and we were both just kind of laughing and just like it was just like it was dumb fun. Mm-hmm. And that kind of it had a feel of like a Hallmark special,
very much so,
but done in a James Gunn kind of way, right? You know, with a bunch of inappropriate, you know, somewhat inappropriate jokes, but relatively tame for the stuff that he can do.
Like, what's
Drax does like
beat up
does
GoBot?
Clearly say that he is that he is like in favor of murder.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly completely like for little kids.
The GoBot scene is the scene that made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
His cousin killed by a GoBot made me laugh pretty hard. And as someone who grew up with GoBots and had many a GoBot, that worked for me. I thought that was very, it's like, who is even dressing up as a GoBot in Hollywood? Right, like, stupid 80s franchise that was basically a Transformers ripoff. Like, that to me was very
funny. Did you guys try to do like the IP, like the intellectual property math on who owns GoBots?
It's like Hasbro, weirdly enough. And I'd like, I guess, sure, why not?
Yeah.
And there's some weird stuff in here, as you
falls
point out,
under the Disney purview, or you can buy it.
They paid them like $20 for it.
Yeah, really. Yeah, yeah. We're gonna make a reference to this thing that nobody's cared about.
But it was the canonical GoBot, like the one I think of every time is that dude. Yeah,
Turbo. I don't remember his name.
Whatever their version of Optimus Prime, basically. Yeah.
Dan knows. He just wants to.
Oh, I had a lot of GoBots, guys.
It was definitely after my time.
There's some stuff that hits a little weird in here. I was just talking to our pal Jason Snell about this, mm-hmm. and he mentioned the scene where you have cops pull up and just start shooting an unarmed person. I was like, that's
part of the James Gunn part of it that I feel is a little bit like it's a little weird to have that.
Yeah, it's all tone deaf, I think, is sometimes. And like, there's the playing with irreverence, which obviously, you know, we all watched Peacemaker, and that show dips hard into like, we're going to be super irreverent and super like over the top.
Yeah, but it's not set up as
crass.
A Christmas special, right? Like, it's a different.
Exactly. Yeah. This felt weird in out of place, and I think that's, I kind of agree. It's all the like James Gunn stuff that like sometimes really works for me, and sometimes he just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, I did. So I watched this twice. Like, I think when it came out, and then I don't know. When was it? Like, I don't know, a couple of days ago. It really did feel like it got squeezed into the shooting schedule, which I know is the fact, and I know that's the fact. So maybe I'm reading into it too much. But the first time I watched it, I was like, oh my God, I hope they didn't put Carrie Gilliam in like the makeup chair for 6 hours for this, because she's in like... Yeah. So it made me feel better the second time when I remembered like, oh yeah, okay, this is just shot in between everything else. And you can take Drax and Mantis out and have them do their own thing. That probably doesn't screw up a lot of the whole, like the main line of the movie you're filming.
They're probably not the secondary characters, so there's
you know, when there's other stuff going on, you can, you know, take the second director unit, what's it called, second unit, and go shoot all of this stuff. Kidnapping Kevin Bacon as a gift is a hilarious idea, but it's so weird. But it does suit those two characters who are so, I mean, they're not even alien, like they're clearly, I know they're both alien, but they're both kind of dumb humans. It's not like Romulans are aliens and like they're mature. These people just have no idea how anything works at all. Like, what is a society filled with people like this? How does that work? It can't possibly, possibly work.
Right. Right.
But yeah.
So I did want to call out.
They're like large children. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I did want to call out my favorite MCU Easter egg. Which is in the background of some of the shots in LA. There is a marquee with a Kingo Christmas.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yep.
Yeah, which I thought was great. Yeah. I enjoyed that. I love that they keep making sticking references to him in various MCU properties, because there's the joke about him in Ms. Marvel too, where they're like, I had a crush on him, and then
she likes the father.
My mom likes the dad. It's so gross. Yeah. So that's a gift that keeps on giving.
Guy. Yeah. 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 They did a great casting with that. Kumail Nanjiani, he's just a funny dude. And it's just easy to flip, like, because he's so funny, putting him into these little silly gags in the background just works so much better than like a more serious character kind of thing. Like, and the then the Chinese theater was a little bit weird. Does she, because as soon as she runs over him and says Steve and jumps on him, I'm like, have they spoken like at all? I don't think they know each other a little bit.
I thought about it afterwards and like, and was like, yeah, I probably don't think about that too much.
No,
yeah.
I don't think you need
there might have been a crazy after party, but I mean, Tony would die.
Exactly.
It's not like they're going to crack out.
Sure. There's, you know, like the party at Stark Tower, they had another one.
I had that moment of like, what probably would have made more sense is they spent more time with Peter Parker, because he was on the planet with them when they're fighting Thanos. But everybody's forgotten who he is, so you couldn't have her run over to Peter.
Yep.
So they just got backed into a corner, right?
Yeah. The Chinese theater also where Happy got blown up.
Yeah.
That's right.
Iron Man 3, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I enjoyed in the when she buys the celebrity map that John Cena is on it.
Yep.
Which felt like a nice Peacemaker
thing
to have there, which was funny. There was a couple other people in there, but I can't remember who they were now. Yeah.
Queen Latifah.
Yeah, so
Queen Latifah.
Queen Latifah was there.
Yeah, I think Queen Latifah was on it too. Yeah. So I mean, just those bits were more amusing to me as little in jokes.
Yeah.
And the Kevin Bacon stuff I think is overall pretty great. I love how the fictional Kevin Bacon is super into Christmas. Yeah. And has like all the decorations.
Yeah.
Because he apparently
that's
it.
Pretty great. Does he?
Yeah, apparently. Like I saw some like yeah, I mean just like, the headline from like Comic Book Resource. You know, Kevin Bacon in reality actually hates Christmas.
Is he even Christian? Is he like is he Jewish? I have no idea.
I didn't read the article.
But he seems like a good sport. So
I mean, you absolutely. Have to, yeah, I mean, to do this special, I think you have to be.
Yeah, I mean, you are. I don't know if you're the
he's
butt of the
fun
joke
of himself. And
yeah,
yeah.
Right. I guess but, you know, so. I mean, in a harmless way. It's, yeah,
he's a little bit of a dick. You know, I mean, he's sort of smarmy and full of himself a little bit.
I guess so. I kind of liked when they showed up. I kind of liked when they showed up at his gate and he just ignores them because whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And he's kind of nice to them when they have broken over his wall and are like banging on his door. He's like, he doesn't yell at them or anything.
He's like,
okay,
it's not cool, guys.
This is not
right?
cool.
Like,
you guys got to go. Like, I'm going to call the police, but, you know, leave my elf and my candy cane and just please go. Like, it's a pretty reasonable response for a kind of a wild situation. So I thought that made him look pretty good.
One of my favorite bits is Mantis telling Drax that he was irresponsible for leaving behind his elf.
Yeah, you lost your little.
I was responsible and brought mine with me.
I lost
that's
my little
not
man.
Responsible. You're stealing something.
Yeah, the stuff with the stuff with the candy cane and the elf. I actually thought that was some of the funnier bits.
Yeah.
Where like you know he's like, I forgot my little man.
Yeah.
I forgot my little man. I do you want that or do you want a little man? He's like thinking about it. And then I thought it was kind of cute that she gives him one as the present at the end. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. That was amusing. I thought that was kind of one of the better bits for me that landed.
Yeah, it was cute. So the way the actual plot fits together is that it does not. They chase Kevin Bacon around somehow and then mess with his mind, put him in a box, and then unmess with his mind. And then he runs away and they chase him and just off camera. Something happens because the next thing we see, he's like walking into the new spaceship, the Bowie, with what's his name, Tim Gunn's brother, Sean Gunn, as
Craglin.
Who goes back and explains the story of like how, Christmas was ruined. Is that it? No, that's at the beginning.
Yondu ruined Christmas.
Sort of gives him some of Peter's backstory.
Right.
Fill in why they did what they did.
Yeah.
I thought it was also nice that you got Michael Rooker, basically, after having died in Guardians 2, that you get a little cameo from him in the animated bit, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah,
they did that Ralph Bakshi thing, apparently. They filmed him live, and then they rotoscoped.
Oh, did they? Okay. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. You can kind of tell, like, the simple lines and, like, the motion of them is very
except
smooth.
Except they actually finished it instead of just, you know, getting three-quarters of the way through the movie and stopping.
Yeah, they didn't go full backshot.
Like in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they didn't go full backshot on this. They actually finished the job. Yeah. It's difficult to understand kind of where Kevin Bacon's coming from, other than he is effectively just the spirit of Christmas. I like that he gets on the phone with Kira Sedgwick, I think. That's his real wife on the phone. Yeah.
Yes.
I thought that was cute. Like,
oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I've got to explain the spirit of Christmas to some people. And of course he does it through song. And he's got a band or something too. He's a musician.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cute. It's very much in the Christmassy, like the Hallmark Christmas spirit of having a couple of musicals.
Mm-hmm.
The animated spots sort of are like a little homage maybe to like the stop motion-y stuff or like other animated Christmassy stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The mixed, like the musical and that and sort of the silly hijinks chase. Fish Out of Water is another kind of thing about sort of these Christmas Hallmarky things. I think they hit all the beats and it didn't really hang that well together. But it was like sort of a gnarly Christmas tree with like lovable ornaments on it in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the structure's kind of.
I didn't think about it as much as like I wasn't. I guess I was not expecting too much.
Yeah.
And so I was, you know, reasonably pleasant.
I think
that's the best
for
way
me.
To do it.
It's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, here's where I come down on it, which is like, I like, I'm more of a fan of Christmas than I am of Halloween, but I liked Werewolf by Night better than I like this.
Oh, I think, well, yeah. I think that is just a better...
It's better made.
It's better It's more serious. And, you know, and it's done by someone who is, you know, kind of making his big time directorial debut. I know he's directed one or two things before that, but this was like his personal project. Whereas this is just a side thing that they did for fun.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. I think Werewolf by Night is a labor of love, and this is a labor of fun.
Yeah.
Like, let's just go have.
Did we talk about the special? I mean, I think Guy mentioned it. Was it Director by Night? Is that what it was called?
Oh, yes. Director. Yeah. I watched that.
I started it, and I was surprised at how personal it is.
Yes.
And it's great. It's really, I mean, I was sort of stunned by how
it hits me at a. I do want to mention that, like, so it's made by his Michael Giacchino's brother, who is an Academy Award winning documentarian.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that.
Yes. A thing I looked up and found. And I found it alternately, like, extremely touching and also at some points very cringe inducing because it is so personal, but also because his brother is a little bit weird. And, like, I don't know if you've gotten this far, but there's a scene where he wants to ring the bell on the set. Yes. And I'm like, oh, please stop. This is so painful to watch.
Awkward,
I cannot watch this.
Yeah.
But it is still a very, very touching overall thing about, like, Michael Giacchino and growing up and his, like, groups of friends and all the movies they made as kids. Like, all of that is very cute.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
This does not have that behind it, which is fine. You don't need it. It's a good, goofy, fun, you know.
I would like to see I'd like to see Marvel do more of these specials, whether it's stuff that's tied into movies or not.
Yeah.
I think it's fun and it's interesting and it's something it doesn't require as much commitment as doing like a TV series. And you can like sort of pair it with stuff or use it to like hook into like holidays or whatever. I don't know. It's cute. I would say
I think it's
also compared to, I felt like if you want a good Christmas story, I would say Hawkeye is a better Christmas story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like it's fine for what it is.
Yeah. Hawkeye's got a little
A little bit more serious while still being fun.
Yeah. Hawkeye's a little bit of that kiss kiss bang bang Christmas vibe, which is Christmassy, but you know. I'm blanking on the director's name. Same guy that did Iron Man 3.
Shane Black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Iron Man 3, another kind of Christmassy kind of
another Christmas.
All he
movie.
Does is Christmas.
Yeah. Rank your Marvel Christmas themed entertainment.
I guess
there's only two, right? There's only these two.
Oh, there's three now.
Oh, there's
three.
Right,
there's Hawkeye.
Yeah,
there's
Hawkeye.
This,
Hawkeye's
and there's Iron Man
first.
Three.
Hawkeye's definitely first. Yeah. And I would put this. I would put the Guardians over. Iron Man 3.
Oh, yeah?
That's a toughie. I might put Iron Man 3 up over this. I know you don't.
Yeah.
There's aspects of it that I like, but still.
Yeah, so, I mean, I liked the Kevin Bacon bits. Yes, that's right. I said it. The Kevin Bacon bits. And
I bet he loves that.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. And some of the stuff with, like, you know, the Christmas decorations and whatever. Overall, I thought this was fine.
Yeah.
It did not really blow me away, and nor did I hate it.
I wouldn't say it blew me away either, but I mean,
it was fine.
But
I was mildly entertained for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
One bit that I did kind of enjoy was creepy ass mantis moving around Kevin Bacon's home. Like, she's like jumping on walls and like moving.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Yeah, right. A very different, like almost. What's the
Japanese like an insect
TV thing?
A TV
thing. Yeah, but
like
the girl
spooky
crawls out of the TV.
The ring.
Yeah,
the ring. Yeah.
It was creepy. It's like, where were you the past three movies? There were four movies that we've seen you in. Like, I would have been terrified of you.
That's right. Yeah, she like beats up a lot of the cops and stuff right? Like,
yeah, she's much more physical.
A lot happening there.
Yeah. It's like she was in that battle at the end of Endgame, but it was like, but sort of on the periphery. And you don't really know exactly how she's. Yeah.
Well, yeah, her killer move seems to be jump on somebody's shoulders and just tell them to go to sleep.
Make them go to sleep, yeah.
Yeah, but no, in this one.
Which is
like
a good move.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
it's solid work.
Yeah.
I did want to, let's see. One of my frustrations here is my favorite Guardian's character is Rocket, who is not in most of this.
No.
But I did enjoy his brief appearances, as well as Cosmo finally gets
lines,
mm-hmm. Which is fun. And then I enjoyed the bit at the end, disturbing as it was, where is it Nebula gives Rocket Bucky's arm.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that's going to
yeah, there's some questions.
Play out if it's going to be mentioned ever again. But
kind of thing which makes you think, like, is this canon?
Yeah, right.
Did you guys see the post-credits thing?
Was there? Yes, with Groot, where they are making Groot the
tree? They're making a Christmas tree out of Groot.
Yeah.
Groot.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see it the first time because I was like, okay, that's it. I'm out. Thank you. I have been Christmased at, and I'm done now. But the second time, I just happened to watch all the credits. At the end, Rocket acknowledges that they're in a special. Like, Groot sort of slumps and all the stuff falls down, and Rocket's like, oh, now we're going to have to do another special, which is, I mean, maybe I'm just sensitive coming off of She-Hulk. I was like, that's a weird thing to do. I don't know how much of this needs to make sense. I don't think Bucky lost his arm in any way at all. It won't be mentioned. Don't worry about anything. The only thing that matters is now they have a base in Nowhere, which I imagine will be established in, like, the opening shot of Guardians 3 kind of thing. I don't think we need to read too much into this. I think they can still cast Kevin Bacon in the MCU. I don't think it precludes anything, really. So, you know.
Technically, he has been in a Marvel movie, just not MCU movie.
He has, and with the whole multiverse bonanza going on, who knows what the, I mean,
yeah.
Just that X-Men franchise by itself is multiverses tearing into their own multiverses. It's so confusing.
Yeah. It does lead to the question, what is Kevin Bacon, the Kevin Bacon of the MCU universe, has he ever starred in an X-Men movie?
Well,
that's true.
I would have liked it if they'd mentioned something, because he went through a couple of movies. He went through, what, Halloween?
Yeah.
Or Friday the 13th when he gets killed by Jason.
Friday the 13th, yeah.
And he meant, well, of course, Footloose, which is sort of...
I didn't even know that. I mean,
I did not either, yeah. But James Gunn is an old horror dude. You know, he knows his horror inside out, so I'm sure that was like when Kevin Bacon comes to mind
for him.
That
was Kevin Bacon's...
First of all?
That was Kevin Bacon's fourth movie.
He has an incredible, like, do you have his IMDb up? And he's got so many.
I have his filmography on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I did not realize his first appearance was in Animal House.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I remember him being in that.
I've only seen it like super long time ago. So, yeah. I did appreciate the little references to his various roles. I agree. An X-Men joke would have been pretty funny, but I think they probably just didn't want to do that.
I mean, they don't have to do that. I was just...
And I did laugh pretty hard at the bits where they realize he's an actor.
Yeah.
and they're just their reactions. How terrible actors are and everything like that. That's pretty solid.
I don't know if I needed Nebula being like, maybe all actors aren't pieces of... I guess it's dumb because we're telling people to watch this show. And we're not swearing on this one, so I don't know. Whatever. Who knows how this works? It doesn't matter. But Nebula basically says, hey,
take it up with the editor guy.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, man, if I just rolled through that one, it would have been fine. But the notion of, like, I like that joke. It's fine. It's cute. But I don't know if I needed it that much. You know, it felt like sort of boring and like an inside joke for them. I don't know. It wasn't Christmassy at all, and it just kind of, it didn't land for me. I liked it in the spaceship, but the callback to it from Nebula, it was just like, did anybody really think actors were pieces of garbage? I don't think that was established in the show. There was no precedent for that. I don't know why anybody would be thinking that, but sure, whatever. And Kevin Bacon does turn out to be a nice guy, so that's cool at least.
Yeah. No, I thought that was pretty good. I don't know. Do we want anything more you want to say about this? Should we do a quick ritual, or should we just roll?
Let's just do a quick ritual, because whatever. I'll go first. I think, and I feel bad doing this. It's kind of a John Jr. Like, A biff to me means that, like, they tried something and they did a good job and they achieved what they wanted to achieve. And I don't know if they did that here. It seems like they had fun and I'm glad it exists and that's cool, but it didn't really do anything for me. And I don't know. I think I would have liked to have seen something a little bit more considered rather than sort of being just, it felt like a little slapdashed. But I have no beef with it. I just kind of, doesn't bother me, doesn't excite me. Cool it exists. If somebody really enjoys it and gets in the Christmas spirit, more power to them. Just not really for me.
Yeah, for me, it's a John Jr.
I feel like, so bad.
It's fine. No, it's fine.
I'm gonna pull the average up.
Okay. It was not bad, but I just didn't love it. And I think I watched it kind of in the background. My attention was not grabbed by it. And like, I don't mind stuff that's sort of, you know, more humorous than dramatic. I didn't need to be like a drama filled instant of the MCU, but it just, I think just the overall, there's enough things about the sense of the humor of it that just don't work for me. Like, it's fine. If it works for other people, that's great. Just wasn't entirely my thing. So yeah, that's where I am on that. It's Matt.
Save us, John.
I'm going to give it a biff. I mean, it's not a super strong biff for sure, but I thought it was fun. I thought it was funny. And, you know, and I love a lighthearted attempt at a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was quirky in a very James Gunn way, which I generally do enjoy. Mm-hmm. I think I like most of his work. So I think even though there were like really some fairly weird bits to it, I sort of appreciated that, like that was kind of the charm of it. But I also think that I did not go into it with high expectations. And the first time I saw it, I think my reaction was a little bit more like yours. And then the second time I saw it and seeing Hank's reaction to it too, I think he kind of enjoyed it. And we were both just sort of laughing together at like things that I thought were funny the first time, but I thought were much funnier the second time watching it with him. So I think my second viewing pulled it up to this level. Mm. I might have reacted the same way on the first viewing as you guys did, but I ended up enjoying it. And like I said, I didn't expect much. So that was probably a major factor.
I can see that 100%. If I was sitting down with a kid that was age appropriate to watch this with, like, that'd be fun and charming and silly and like all the good stuff would, and like Christmas, it's in who you share it with, right? And I just sat here alone with like a lump of coal in my stocking watching this and being like, okay, I kind of don't really get it. So,
your heart shrinking. My heart,
yeah. I went full Grinch.
up on your hill, in your snow cave.
Yeah, with an adorable little dog. Yeah.
Yeah, little antlers on it. Yeah. Should we...
Let's move on to,
and talk
to the,
about...
the trailer. Which came out yesterday, I believe, something like that.
Yesterday is right, yeah. So, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Indiana Jones and the Dialogue.
Yeah, Indiana Jones.
It was a big deal. What was going on? Was it like... Is there a schedule for this?
Comic-Con in Brazil was one of them.
There was a Brazil Comic-Con.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I think... I don't know if those both were part of it or not, but I think at least one of them was tied into that.
Okay.
And then the Guardians of the Galaxy, we were expecting Volume 3 to be the last Guardians movie, at least probably the last one directed by James Gunn, since he has a new job that would make it less likely that he'll be directing Marvel movies anytime in the future, which I think is fine. I think it's good to bring these little arcs of these characters to a close. I'm on board with that. Plus,
I would rather they don't continue everything forever.
Right.
Well, and the Guardians are something that like the Avengers, you can rotate the membership of Guardians of the Galaxy and like have other people in it that are told by stories that told by somebody else. Right. That I think that's fine too. Mm-hmm. But I think I actually, for the most part, liked this trailer a lot, and part of that was because it was a little more, serious isn't the right word, but like there was a story and like emotion behind it, and it looked kind of sad, and I was like kind of okay with that, I guess. Like it looked like a like they're trying to bring this to like a bittersweet ending sort of.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's got kind of a maybe not a downer vibe on it, but like there's parts of it that seem like I don't know, like stuff's going to go down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful in many ways, just colorful spaces. Mm-hmm. They've got a uniform now.
Right.
Yep.
I suspect from seeing that trailer, we will understand a little bit more why Peter is not so happy-go-lucky in the Christmas special, maybe, because things do seem a little bit more grown up, for lack of a better word. You know, like they seem like they've got responsibilities. Certainly they do in this, when he's like sort of bossing around all of the people doing the random stuff on the on nowhere. And the right. trailer sort of like led me to sort of feel the same way, that they'd kind of, I don't know about grown up, but they were at a point in their adventures together where it wasn't quite as charming and goofy as it was, and certainly in the first one.
Yeah, the uniform of it made me feel a little bit like they had sort of taken over maybe of like the Nova Corps.
Something, yeah. I mean, they do. So the comics do look like that.
Xandar has been, well, you know, cut in half, right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, nothing good. Yeah, so I mean, it does seem like they maybe have a more official role in,
yeah,
if not policing the galaxy, at least like keeping an eye on things.
It is the Ravager logo that they have on still.
But is it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do we think about?
But they do have like.
What do we think about the
organization?
The anti-human world. That's not the right way of putting it. Like some kind of mirror universe that is definitely Earth, yeah, but is filled with like human animal hybrids.
Animal, yeah, right, right.
Yeah, it's. I think that's a high evolutionary thing. Like.
Oh yeah, it could be
like
right,
Wendigo Mountain type
stuff. Is the high evolutionary tied into Adam Warlock?
I don't know, but
I don't know either. It's I don't even know what that is. Can't remember.
I mean, he's definitely tied into like Wanda and Pietro, like Scarlet Witch and what's his name, Quicksilver.
Yeah,
because Wundagore.
Oh yeah. The High Evolutionary. They mention if you go to the High Evolutionary Wikipedia page, they confirm he is in Guardians 3, and he's played by the actor. And I think this is the same guy. It's the guy from Peacemaker, right?
Oh, yeah. The guy who is the original Bug dude. Yeah, Mern. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was playing High Evolutionary. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
I saw him. Yeah. Yep. I apologize in advance. Chukwudi Iwuji is the actor's name.
Yeah.
I guess because I saw him in the trailer and had that moment of like, oh, it's that guy. It's the guy from Peacemaker. Mm-hmm. And then it went out of my head because there's just lots of little different, you know, shots in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, apparently, according to Wikipedia, he is playing the High Evolutionary in Guardians 3.
So that would explain the like the cowmen and all of that wearing their human clothes in a very mundane suburban environ. Weird. I don't know where this movie's going at all.
Yeah.
But I suspect we are seeing the origins of Rocket or some explanation for his background. Because he seems to have a love interest of an otter. Which is
or an old friend or something.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's a hug. It's not like, you know.
Yeah.
Not making out or
I don't know where I got that love interest.
If you just want to read
Otto's just look so beautiful that I'm like, of course he's got a crush on the Otto.
Just in case you need this, because I just looked at the Wikipedia page. This character is Lila, an anthropomorphic otter who is an associate of Rocket's.
An associate.
There you go. Well, I guess she is actually a character from the comics.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? Yeah. But anyway, so I suspect that Rocket's background is a factor in this, maybe even their mission. Maybe even they're like, okay, let's go figure this out. And that's where they land on planet Wendigore, for lack of a better term. The three movies have basically been about family, right? The first one is like a found family coming together. The second one
is about family.
they live their life one quarter parsec at a time.
I've never seen any of those movies. I still somehow know.
They should have that should be the final words that Goot says. It's about family.
Yeah, go listen to the not playing season where Lex and I watch all of the Fast and Furious movies.
I've seen one of those movies, and I think I've had my fill. I mean, they're fine. If people enjoy them, go. Yeah, I mean, that there was cars chasing a submarine somehow. I'm like, okay, that's wild, but not for me.
That was one of the better ones. I'll give you that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it was fun, but I'm like, I don't really need to go deep on these characters.
No, they're not. They're not great.
Yeah. So I suspect that this is gonna kind of close out the storylines that we've got, right? I have no idea what is gonna happen with Peter. As an aside, I noticed that they start calling him Pete in this, which I like a lot, and they continue doing it in the trailer, which is sort of a change from the first two movies where there's not contentious, but like there's, you know, Rocket's always kind of being mean to him, or like they're snarkier to each other, right? Calling him Pete is like a really familial, warm way of addressing each other that feels earned at this point.
He calls him, I think he generally calls him Quill in the rest of the movies. Yeah, right. And so, but it does, I agree with you, guy. It keys into the fact that they've all been through so much stuff together. Like they've now solidified that. Cause in the first one, like you said, it's a found family, but it still somewhat feels like they're all doing their own things, even though they're together. Whereas this, it feels like by now they actually have genuine affection and love for one another, even if like it's sometimes under a veneer of like we're still gonna like rag you and like give you a hard time,
just like a regular family.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
like how I opened the show by complaining that you guys didn't want to talk to me anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, just like
a,
that
there's a fine example.
Yeah. But yeah, Pete is also just such a, I mean, I've got an old friend called Pete, but like there's just something about that name that is I don't know. It's just disarming. It's like a little boyish kind of thing. It's just nice.
Well, it's like Spider-Man, right?
Yeah. Well, that's Pete. Yeah. Do they call him Pete all the time? I guess so.
They call him Pete.
Yeah. Maybe. Oh, that's, yeah. Maybe yeah. that's where I'm getting that. I don't know. It's just. It's a nice, friendly kind of. I don't know where I'm going with this. It's just. It's nice. It's warm and it's cozy, and I feel good about that aspect of it. I don't know what the story is with Gamora, nor have I ever really known what the story is with that, because I have no idea what she sees in this guy. So I don't really know. It just feels like, okay, I guess the two A-listers like the kind of have to get it on, you know?
Yeah, it's the kind of relationship that happened because it has to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm more invested in the like Rocket and Groot stories. Yeah. I don't know. I think there's something about like those characters that I think resonates for me. Also, I feel like you could keep making Rocket and Groot movies because like they're just CGI characters. Yeah. As long as and Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel keep showing up to take their paychecks for doing voiceovers, like do that forever, as far as I'm concerned.
Hasn't he done by him Groot in like every possible intonation yet?
Yeah. I mean, at this point,
I'm probably giving it short shrift.
I'm sure you could train an AI model to spit out variations on Groot.
Oh, God, yeah. Well,
once again, we circle back around to it's about family.
Yeah. Yeah. We did not discuss the Groot redesign that is in the holiday special.
Buff Groot.
Buff Groot.
Groot, yeah.
I don't like it.
I read a thing about this.
It doesn't really do anything for me. I kind of like the tall, slender-ish looking Groot as opposed to the boxy.
It felt a little weirder.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they make the point in something I read somewhere that this is like, it's a different Groot, right? Yeah, like it's the son of Groot. He's like more of an adolescent, you know, like or you know, like a younger, like more muscly Groot. Whatever, it's fine. I agree. I don't like the look as much, but it's fine.
Just in terms of like bug me. And this is it. Like just visually, we've got like three pretty boxy characters now, as opposed to like sort of having a diversity of body morphism, if that makes any sense. And I don't mean diversity in like representational ways. Just Drax is big and thick. Peter's actually pretty big and thick, not as much as Drax, obviously. And then this Groot is like bigger than Drax and also thick. It's like you could Russian nesting to all these guys and they would all fit. There was something specific about Groot being really tall and lanky that like made him feel extra alien and weird.
Like when you had them in the lineup in that first trailer, right. Yeah, yeah. The first
there
movie.
You go. Yeah.
They look kind of like all over the place.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. Rocket's yeah, short and Groot's tall and, you know, yeah. Peter just looks like a normal dude and yeah. Gamora's in there and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of. But
no, I hear you.
It becomes a little bit more symmetrical in a way, but whatever. We also see Groot shooting off guns with like six arms, which yeah. is.
Many. Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of feel that like all they should do is like land the spaceship, let Groot out and have him solve all of their problems and then just call it a day. Like the guy's pretty indestructible.
Groot needs a little instruction though.
I guess so.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't think he's got the wherewithal to.
And there's also the callback in the end there to, I think, what is one of the great moments of the first Guardians of the Galaxy movies, the We Are Groot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is, to me, still, like, again, I just think that's an incredibly touching scene in the first movie.
It is. I got like little chills in the trailer.
A little tear.
Yeah. Definitely
between
watching
that and Rocket looking like he's having a bad day. You know, I feel like that was the moment of like, oh yeah, we're gonna potentially lose some people this time around. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think maybe it's appropriate that we do. And I'm not that I like all of these characters. I mean, none of them are really my favorite. But in terms of the way I think James Gunn wants to close out character arcs, and I suspect he does, I think this one's going to be quite a different sort of affair from the previous mm-hmm. two. And I don't think everybody walks away. And I think in some ways that's good in terms of the way the story goes. Provided it
and the evolution
makes
sense, of the MCU too, right? Like stuff has to move on in the MCU because characters have to come and go.
Yeah.
And we've seen this already in like the last phase or two. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is, I think it makes sense to have, you know, the passing of the torch. And I'm okay with it. All good stories have endings.
Right.
And you know, like even if they're sad or bittersweet or what have you, I think that's important.
Right.
You can get away with not doing this in the comics, right? Because the characters don't age, right? They can age if you want them to, but it's not like you have actual actors in the comics playing these people who are
but
just going to noticeably get older.
It becomes a problem in the comics because you're stuck with all this back history that you have to deal
with.
And honestly, I think it's one of the big flaws. I mean, I re-upped my Marvel Unlimited subscription and mm-hmm. I'm not reading much because every time I get in, it feels like an exercise in futility because I feel like none of these stories have any, they don't matter that much. I mean, if someone's going to die, they're going to come back in like, you know, 3 months. So it's like, why am I bothering? I would almost prefer it if they would do like, and they've done a little bit of this a couple of times, and they certainly did it with the Unlimited Universe, Ultimate Universe.
Ultimates, yeah.
And, but just like, you know, do it like 10 years, right? Do it in 10-year chunks or something like that. For 10 years, we've got this one universe, and then we're going to start over again.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you bring back the same characters and do them slightly differently, and or, you know, 5 years or whatever, like pick something. Or do it on this. I mean, I just, you know what I mean.
To their credit.
Yeah. In some ways, DC has tried that a lot more.
Yeah, I was just about to say. Yeah.
I think
it's by
also
accident.
Struggled with it, right?
Yes. I think it's by accident. Yeah. I think they did the new 52, and then they're like, oh, that did not work.
I think the problem with DC is it's not, there's no organized.
Intentional. Right.
Intentionality. I think they're just like, at some point, somebody comes in, somebody takes over, and they're like, we're blowing everything up.
Yeah, I think you're right. Do 5 or 10 years. 10 years may be a bit long. Like, figure out how long most people read comic books for during their life.
But a comic, you know, I mean, comics only come out every month. So,
yeah, so 5 years may not be that long.
Some time. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the limitations of the MCU breed more need for creativity, I think, in that way, right? The fact that you are, and you're not, as we just discussed, there are CGI characters who could, in theory, continue forever, but also
actors age.
You do have people
actors
who are actors who age and are inextricably linked to roles, and it's like, well, you know, Steve is on the moon and he's not coming back. Sorry, like, you know, Tony's dead. He's not coming back. Like, that's not the world we're playing in here. And you know what? Maybe in some in 10 years from now, they'll be like, ah, here's a cameo from alternate universe Robert Downey Jr. who has come back to be Tony Stark. Fine. You can get away with that maybe once.
Yeah.
But like, sooner or later, you will not have him anymore. And so I would argue Kevin Feige at the MCU has done a great job of realizing this ahead of the time and planning out, as John just said, hey, we've got like a 10-year plan for how this is going to work. And here are the stories we're going to tell. Yeah. And here's how we're going to evolve.
Yeah, it's almost like a,
and
like
if
a,
I may just segue, but if you want to say something.
Well, I was going
to
say it's almost DC, like a baseball team.
Has not traditionally done that.
Right. No, yeah, no.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Kevin, like Feige's managing it a little bit more like a team, right? Where the your star players are going to age out. You got to have like, you know, you got to be bringing in rookies and hoping,
young talent.
Hoping it works out. Yeah. You know, Miss Marvel seems to have worked out. A bunch of the other stuff seems to have worked out. So that's, it's good and it makes sense. I'm just laughing at myself because I realized I'm like, hey, actors age, and then you know, one day after Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny just dropped. Like, yeah. Okay. I mean, they do age, but who's to say that they age out, you know? So, anyway, he must be so much older.
I'd watch
than
that guy punch Nazis at any age.
I would watch anybody punch
Nazis.
Don't
do the math.
But especially that guy.
That, also that, but
Don't. Yeah, I don't know. Do we want to talk about James Gunn stuff? I know we've already gone like an hour, so...
Yeah, we're getting close to an hour, but let's just keep it brief. I do believe this Guardian, like we just said, Volume 3 of Guardians is going to be the last one, probably because, well, a couple of reasons. I believe Gunn had a 3-movie plan, and this one is 6 years after Volume 2 because Marvel fired him.
Oh, yeah.
and then there was a pandemic. So... production got delayed by like 6 years, so it's much later than I think he expected to still be working on it. But it does it. Everything I've seen him say, or just the way he seems to talk about this stuff, is that he sincerely likes this movie and he sincerely wants to do it. And the actors all seem equally engaged. I remember when he did get fired, everybody was like, "Well, we're not coming back for another one unless you bring it back." And you know, Disney eventually had the good sense to sort of do that. So I think he mostly planned to end it with this one anyway, and now he's what, vice president of DC movies or TV, whatever it is. He's the big shot,
basically head of the creative side. He's the Kevin Feige.
He's the Kevin Feige of DC. Yeah. And in comics, you can't have writers and creators that can sort of work for either. That is not going to be the case in this one. It doesn't make sense. Like that.
Yeah, not when you're that high.
Yeah,
up.
The shareholders would have a fit. I assume it would be part like, what are you doing? You can't do this.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. I'm sure his contract precludes him from
doing it. I would be shocked if it didn't.
Like, otherwise, DC's lawyers are terrible.
Yeah, I'm sure he had to. Yes.
Well, they might be.
It's possible. Yeah, Disney lawyers definitely know what they're talking about. But yeah, I mean, I would be shocked if it wouldn't make sense. And I don't think Marvel would even want that either. Like, we don't want to be letting these guys know all of our stuff or like the advancements in behind the scenes, how we manage our productions. We don't want all of that going back to, you know, the distinguished competition.
Exactly. And I would also lay money that a lot of the cast probably had like 6 movie deals and have now, because you've done 3 Guardians, they all showed up in 2 Avengers movies. And, you know, whether you count the Christmas special or the Thor movie or whatever, like a lot of them probably have like hit the terms of their contracts and are, I'm sure those people are like, yep, I'm good.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
Yeah, I mean, I saw an interview with, I just briefly looked at an interview with Zoe Saldana, and she's just like, I think I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been doing this for a while, and it's sort of, you're kind of in this box where you have to go and do this thing every so often, and, you know, and it's a silly superhero. I mean, she didn't say this, but you can understand the...
She's off to do serious stuff, like the Avatar.
Well,
movie.
I was going to say, she's the reigning queen of, like, sci-fi genre stuff now, right? She's... Uhura, or was a version of Uhura. Yep. She's in the MCU and Avatar. Like, she's just nerd box office gold somehow. I don't mean somehow. She's cool. She's fine. But, like, that's a lot. I would also not sign up for doing more of this when I imagine she has many opportunities that don't involve getting stuck in either blue or green paint all the time. Right. Sorry, I know Avatar is all mocap, but you know what I mean. you know, certainly, but yeah, certainly I would, I would be expanding my screen. Career. Yeah. I would be expanding my career beyond the stuff that she's most well known for, if I was her. Right. And then we got Bradley Cooper. Again, he does not need to be doing Rocket, although, whatever, he can probably just roll up in his PJs and do it. Groot is cute, but, like, whatever. Besides those shorts that we made, I don't think we need him. Like, I don't know where that character goes without his relationship with Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Drax, okay, fine, but whatever. Again, man, I'm forgetting the guy's name, but he's does plenty of movies.
Dave Bautista.
Yeah. I mean, he's a Bond villain and whatever. He's
in the new Rian Johnson, the Knives Out movie.
Oh, is he? Oh, okay. Right. I've been intentionally trying not to learn anything about that movie. Yeah, anyway, whatever. All of these people have plenty of other stuff to do. Yeah. So I think it's good to wrap it up. And I think, you know, with James Gunn going over to DC, good time to just wrap it all up and then move on.
I will say the James Gunn thing, I think my biggest trepidation is I just don't quite know if the tone, like, if James Gunn is as smart as Kevin Feige, then he will not impose his own tone across the DC universe.
This once before. I think.
But the watching the Christmas special reminds me of that fact, mm-hmm. where it's like, I don't want all the I don't want all my DC movies like this either.
I don't either. And so I don't. I mean, I would say that they're not going to do that. But you know, they had Snyder running the thing for a while, and he kind of imposed his tone on a lot of.
Yeah.
Stuff, but not. I mean, I don't know. I don't know when Shazam got made. Like, I think he was sort of on his way. He was out at that point, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Black Adam seems. Anyway, I haven't seen it, but from what I've heard, it seems to have a similar Snyder-esque sort of tone to it. The other thing is, I imagine Gunn is inheriting the universe as is.
Well.
Yeah. I mean, although whether he will need to,
like, do you write that ship or do
get
you
to like. Do exactly what he, you know, what John said, and say, yeah. like, right, coming in, cleaning house, like, restart it.
I mean,
reboot
you do
it.
Have like Ezra Miller flashpointing the crap out of stuff, who has got us by witness. I kind of just wish he flashpointed himself out of existence. Not in a harmful way, just like, man, if they, I bet you, if they could go back in time and cast anybody else, they would,
oh my God,
they would have done it. Yeah.
But I mean, like, Cavill has shown that he wants to come back. So, like, I mean, I think there is something there where you could, like, save the stuff you want to save.
Yeah.
Right. And then figure out a way to rebuild the universe around those elements if you're smart, right? Like, that's the kind of thing. And, like, so the hook for this,
as
we were talking about, it
is just continuing to do the movies that you like, you know, that you think are good,
right?
And then you try new things into that, and you don't have to, like, say, and you don't even have to say anything happened, you can just keep going.
Right. Well, but to the point, like, you know, as we're going to discuss for sort of our hook for this, is that they announced that essentially going forward, they would be interconnecting stuff like the MCU had done. And I think there's still some questions of exactly how that's going to play out, Like, are we going to see Robert Pattinson's Batman hang out with Henry Cavill's Superman?
I don't know.
But yeah, if I were them, I would be making a plan now. It's just a question of what exactly that plan, how that plan comes to fruition, I guess. Yeah.
I do, while James Gunn's sense of humor or sensibility does not always completely align with my own, I do respect the guy, and he's pulled off a lot more than I would have expected. Again, Peacemaker, great show. Would not have expected it. And I guess by virtue of my sort of, my belief in him or my admiration for him as a filmmaker, I suspect he's open to other tones that are not all of his own. I am sure he watches movies all over the place and has all kinds of opinions on them. He happens to make movies the way he makes movies, and that's what he likes to do. I don't know if I doubt. I would not bet on the fact that he's going to compel everybody to sort of conform to his sort of view of what the universe should be.
I think so.
Beyond having like how do we interconnect these things, you know? Like this character behaves like this in these circumstances. So you know, you can't have Superman in your movie. Well, Superman's a very nice guy. I don't know. You can't have Batman in your movie eating ice cream. Maybe you could. I don't know. I can't think of something.
Only if they make ice. It's only got to be chocolate because it's the only ice cream.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to pick
something. Batman's not going to laser tag unless he's there to kill everybody. Kill everybody with the laser tag.
There you go. So the examples I came up with were like, well, Superman's not going to kill anybody. I'm like, no, scratch that. Batman's, okay, no, scratch that. I don't know. Whatever it is. Like, I think the characters will be expected to, you know, more or less operate within their boundaries. And besides that, I think, you know, he's likely to let talented filmmakers do what they do best, which is do talented stuff. I think Star Wars, the TV stuff, has benefited from that a lot with hits and misses, to be honest. Like, Andor is great.
Yeah.
Boba Fett, unfortunately, the other end of that spectrum.
Less great. Less great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's probably... a good place to leave it
for
this week.
Yeah.
We got
for this
more
week,
to talk about,
this
but
month,
is it now time for my half hour monologue on the trial of the Incredible Hulk?
You
start talking, John.
I'm just gonna mention it. So I did not know that Daredevil makes an appearance in the 1989 made for TV movie the Trial of the Incredible Hulk, featuring Bill Bixby as David Banner, and so I watched it last night, and it was quite something. The introduction of Daredevil is actually fairly good considering the time period and the format. It's not a good, you know, it's not a good TV movie really, but it's it was entertaining to watch just for historical purposes. It's on Hoopla. If anybody wants to watch it, you I think that's the thing where you just have to sign in with like a library card and you can rent it.
Oh yeah, that's
good. I mean, you know, get it for free. So I borrowed it for free and watched it.
That's awesome. I will try to watch that because it could be fun to discuss. And we've been kind of we do have a little programming note. I traveled. The Sandman episode came out the week after it was supposed to come out, and then I think we've missed 2 weeks now, so sorry about that. There's been a whole bunch of stuff going on. We hope to get back on a more regular schedule, and if we'd known that we'd been out for basically a month.
We all used to work at Twitter.
Well, now we've just got a lot more time on our hands. I'm sorry.
We had to go hardcore for a couple of weeks, but now we're not there anymore.
Yeah. Oh, God, that guy. But anyway, yeah, sorry. If we had known that we would have been missed out for a bit, we would have either planned stuff differently or at least made an announcement. So forgive our absence. What we're going to do in the future, I don't know. We do have Wakanda Forever that we've all seen, so we'll probably get to that either next week or
we had talked about doing The Shadow as well.
We talked about doing The Shadow. Yeah.
Awesome. And I watched it and I got notes, baby. So.
It's great. Okay. So we got The Shadow and there's kind of the second half of Sandman, which I don't know if we need to touch on, but it's the Doll's House portion of it that we can come back to at some point. So no firm plans, but those are the things that are on the docket at this point. So I think that's it. Is there any other announcements? Yeah. Oh, there is. I forgot because we did this a while ago. I deleted Twitter from my phone, which means I can no longer get onto the Biffcast account. Yeah. And I think to get onto that, we have a two-factor authentication that goes to Dan's phone. And I think that was bust last time I heard. So we may never be back on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We may just never be back on Twitter.
I have access to the account if we desperately need it. But
we are over on Mastodon, Biffcast at mastodon.social. However, I couldn't even tell you what to type in to make that happen because that's difficult. Yeah. We will come up with a way.
Should we have a Biff instance?
I've
on Mastodon.
I have thought about
probably not.
That's the thing. I have thought about setting up an instance for podcasts that we could host and stuff, like for friends. But I don't want to manage it. And yeah, it's just going to be a pain in the ass. And like, while it would only be a small group of
people, too much work.
It's a pain. And especially podcasty stuff, which I don't know. I don't want to have to deal with some DMCA stupid takedown notice because somebody ran too much of a long clip in their little blurb or something. Anyway, I'm babbling. Long story short, check us out on Mastodon if you want to see the what used to be on Twitter, and what it's biff@theincomparable.com for the old fashioned, unfailing workhorse of digital communation. The good old email. Is that it? Or you can reach
never,
Dan
never dies.
At 555.
That's true.
612.
Or just drive by his house and throw a rock through the window. Like,
yeah.
Please don't throw. I've had to replace so many windows, guys.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not great. Excellent. Well, yeah, so you can reach us at all of those fine places, or you know, send a raven. you know, what have you?
This meeting could have been a raven.
This could have been a raven, but we'll be back. We got more to talk about. We're not going anywhere. I know we're hitting a little bit of a superhero, new superhero content drought right now. But as we've said, we've got some stuff in the hopper. It'll happen. So keep it locked to 89.7. No, keep it locked to Biff.
Right here on your dial.
Yeah.
I would, of course, as always, like to thank my co-hosts, John Maltz. Thanks for being here.
Glad we finally got back together. I'm finally glad we got back together.
Oh, man. I thought I was.
That's what, you're so out of practice.
I thought I was the one who was losing it. Guy English, thanks for being here.
It was fun. Yeah, it's been a while, and it's really fun to talk to all you guys. One last call to action. Go listen to a complicated
We're really nailing it at
Complicated Profession, talking about Andor. You and Kat and Tony did a great job for honestly one of the best shows that's out there. And I don't just mean a genre show. It's good. It's legit good, and people should watch it.
It's good TV.
Yeah.
It's good TV. Yeah, and of course you can catch a whole bunch of other podcasts over in The Incomparable. So you should check out many of the fine shows there. And if you enjoy them, maybe sign up to be a member at theincomparable.com/members because, hey, it's the holiday season.
It's Christmas. Yeah.
You owe yourself a little gift.
Oh, speaking of a little gift.
I didn't want to mention anything, but...
Speaking of a little gift, go to... hey, Maltz, how do we get a Climb t-shirt?
Oh, well, you can go to cottonbureau.com and you can search on Climb, probably, or Andor, or Star Wars, or presence there is Giant Squid Productions, and you can also find our fabulous Biff shirts there that from many of the shows that we've watched and enjoyed.
There you go.
They make great Christmas gifts, holiday gifts,
that's
whatever.
True. That is true. And as always, we'd like to thank all of you for tuning in and supporting the show. We really appreciate it. We will see you next time.
Next time. God, you can't even commit to next week.
Next time.